Good morning, Wasatch Back. This is KPCW. You're listening to the Local News Hour. I'm your host, Jennifer Dobner, filling in for Leslie Thatcher. We're going to get started this morning with a little weather outlook from ABC4's Cedric Haynes.
Happy Tuesday, KPCW listeners. It's time for your forecast for the Wasatch Back on this Tuesday. We've got lots of sunshine returning today after a very wintry start to the week. We'll see that sunshine returning, but still chilly temperatures. But hey, it will be warmer than our Monday. High temperatures will climb into the low 50s for us in Park City this afternoon. We'll see those highs climbing into the upper 50s in the Heber Valley. As we make our way into our Wednesday, look for lots of sunshine from north to south across the state. We'll see those temperatures a little warmer. So we're back to near 60 degrees for a high temperature in Park City. We'll see those high temperatures climbing into the upper 60s in the Heber Valley. Now, we do have a weak front that's going to graze northern Utah as we go into your Thursday. Now, I don't expect a ton of precipitation with this, but look for an increase in cloud cover. So we'll call it partly cloudy skies for your Thursday, both in Park City and the Heber Valley. And we will introduce a chance of a few isolated showers and thunderstorms on your Thursday afternoon. Now, again, I don't expect a washout, but there could be just enough moisture to have a couple of scattered downpours making their way through the area as we go into your Thursday afternoon. So please keep that in mind for any of your outdoor Thursday plans. Now, once we get to your Friday, we start to dry things back out. We'll keep a few clouds around as temperatures will be in the mid-60s still for us in Park City on your Friday. We'll see those highs climbing back into the low 70s in the Heber Valley. Now, high pressure, a strong high pressure ridge builds in just in time for the all-important Memorial Day weekend forecast. So that means lots of sunshine for your Saturday and Sunday. We're talking highs on Saturday in the low 70s in Park City. Highs will be in the mid-70s on your Sunday. Meanwhile, the Heber Valley, lots of sunshine for your Saturday and Sunday. Highs in the mid to upper 70s. Saturday will be into the low 80s for highs in the Heber Valley on your Sunday afternoon. And the all-important Memorial Day itself, lots of sunshine in the forecast right now. Highs in the mid-70s in Park City, highs in the low 80s in the Heber Valley. Let's look at your latest forecast for the Wasatch Back on ABC4 meteorologist Cedric Haynes.
Coming up this morning on the Local News Hour, we'll be joined by Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation Executive Director Mike Lures with an update on the area's visitor numbers and the health of the basin's water. Then Park City Song Summit founder Ben Anderson has a look at this summer's lineup. And Recycle Utah Executive Director Andy Hecht has the latest on the center's move and how residents can shape the new facility. Park City firefighters offer wood chipping, home assessments, and other services to offset wildfire risks.
State leaders say this wildfire season could be a dangerous one for Utah, with abnormally dry and warm conditions in the forecast. In Park City, fire restrictions are already in effect. Park City Fire District Marshal Mike Owens says seemingly small steps from locals can go a long way to mitigate the risk.
If we each take care of our own space, then the cumulative effect of that is pretty large. The wood chipping program is great because it allows homeowners to do just that little inconvenient amount of work that makes a big difference when you combine it all together.
The fire district visits homes within its boundaries to reduce fire fuel by chipping and removing wood piles. That includes some Summit County neighborhoods outside the Park City limits, including Jeremy Ranch, Promontory, Trailside, and more. For a map, visit kpcw.org. The chipping program is free, and residents can sign up for the service on the district website. Owens says it runs through the end of September. Firefighters also visit homes to conduct assessments and help homeowners take steps for better fire protection.
At the end, what you walk away with is something that's specific to your house to help you prepare for a wildfire, so that if something does happen here in town, there's a greater chance of your home surviving.
Owens says keeping up with maintenance is one of the most important things homeowners can do. That includes clearing out dry material under decks, pruning back dead or dying bushes and trees, and keeping the roof clear. Assistant Fire Chief Ashley Lewis says the Park City Fire District is ready to respond to what could be an active fire season.
Wildland firefighting is one of our highest priorities. We're ready, we're prepared, we're up staffing stations and with more people this year, and we're ready for what this summer brings.
To request a home assessment from the fire district, visit kpcw.org. Grace Dorfler, KPCW News.
Joining us now in studio is Mike Lors. He's the general manager of the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. Good morning, Mike. Thanks for being here.
Hey, good morning, Jennifer.
So before we start talking about the health of our local water and what it's telling us, I wanted to ask you about drought. 100% of the state is experiencing drought, and I'm curious what impact that has on the water district.
Well, we are the wastewater district, so when people use water, they flush it, goes down the drain, the washing machine water all ends up in our system, and we treat it and put it back into our local streams. But if you look at the drought situation here locally, you know, think of our local mountains as a big sponge, and when it snows, that snow melts, seeps into the ground, and that ground slowly releases that water into our local streams. Now, with our very small snow pack this year, that amount of water that's in that sponge, so to speak, is much less than normal. So we anticipate very low stream flows in East Canyon Creek and Silver Creek, which are the two main streams we have in our community here. And that becomes a problem because we do have our native trout species. And because we all moved here, we all need water. The amount of water in our streams is much less than it has been decades ago. But the real problem is that low stream flow. And below our treatment plants, where we put the water back into the stream, obviously that's not an issue. But certainly in the Kimmel Junction area, Swanee Nature Preserve, all the way up Thames Canyon, and along the rail trail are those segments of stream that I think we'll see an impact because of the low snowpack this year.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk first of today about the most recent water surveillance summary. What is the data telling us about the presence of COVID-19 and the measles?
So we conduct the weekly wastewater surveillance testing, and this is where we look for the genetic material associated with the COVID and measles. Currently, the COVID concentrations are very, very low, basically across the entire state. It's about the lowest I've seen it in quite some time. On the other hand, measles is quite prevalent. We've had positive results here locally, and Colville, JSSD have all had positive measles testing within this last two-week period. So that continues to support the evidence that you know, we have a measles problem here in Utah.
And that's been trending up. Has it not?
That's been trended from what I'm seeing. Now, you'll need to, from a health standpoint of view, you know, you'll need to talk to the health department. But from wastewater standpoint, it's definitely been trending up.
And you report those numbers to the state?
Yes. All of our sampling is in association with the state health department. And then the state health department publishes all the COVID and measles results on a, what we call the dashboard. And you can go to Utah Public Health and go to the dashboard, and you can see those results for all of the locations where wastewater sampled across the state.
Okay. And how that's different than the flush index that you also track every month, isn't it?
Right. The flush index, and I can report on that here. So for the month of April, we estimated that there were 92,115 visitor nights. And that's about a 10% decrease from April a year ago, which is completely understandable with the lack of snow and the drop-off in our local skiers. But the flush index is just a way of estimating the number of people that are in town based on wastewater flows. And it's you know, it's pretty accurate. But as I mentioned, a 10% reduction for April is not unexpected due to the snow situation.
And that down year over year, you've been seeing that for several months based
yes.
on the winter?
Sure, yeah. The last couple of months have all been down 10-15%, and I think the Chamber's hotel numbers will bear that out.
And can you say a little bit more about why you track the flush index, and then what do you do with that data?
Well, that's a great question. So back about 20 years ago, when some of the original founders of this radio station were in place, they came across a kind of tongue-in-cheek report from Aspen where they said, hey, you know, we have so many people in town because the wastewater flows are the you know, the amount of water going down the sewer pipe was up. And we discussed it here, and we said, you know, we can do that, but we're going to do it from a scientific standpoint of view. And we have a rather elaborate mathematical computation that talks about not only the gallons of water, but the strength of the water, which has something to do with how many restaurants are, you know, in business and the amount of business they have. And so, yeah, about, I don't know, 20 years old approximately, we started the flush index here at KPCW.
That's a great story. Yeah. And when you say the strength of the water, what does that mean?
So wastewater is tested based on the amount of organic material that's in it. So that if you have a restaurant and you're washing, you know, dishes that are used for cooking and there's a lot of food material, that's a high level of organic matter.
I see.
So we have what's called a biochemical oxygen demand test. And it is a test that determines how much oxygen is needed to clean that water. And it all has to do with the organic material and the amount of organic material. So the oxygen demand numbers go into the flush index calculation.
And so does that mean that when you see the water, you have to adjust how you're treating it at the treatment plants?
Absolutely. Whenever ski season starts up, we make a huge change in the way we operate our facility because, you know, the fall numbers and the number of visitors is kind of steady. And then, approximately around Thanksgiving when the ski areas open up, we all of a sudden get this huge influx of very high-strength wastewater from the ski areas and all the restaurants because, you know, people are here visiting. And our operators go through an annual change in the way wastewater is treated. And at the end of ski season, we kind of reverse all that and slow things down because everyone, you know, goes home and we have less organic material that we have to treat.
Is that changing at all as we become a more year-round destination community for visitors?
Yes. In the past, we actually shut down part of the treatment plants in the fall and the spring mud seasons, as we call it, and we no longer do that. So, yes, we change as the community changes.
And do you know, are other communities tracking the flush index? Has that become a thing, or is it just here in Aspen? And
Aspen only did it for a very short period of time, and theirs was not what I'd call a scientific approach. As far as I'm aware, I am not familiar with any other scientific flush index anyplace here locally. I say locally out west.
Well, I guess that's something we can claim as our own special feature of being in the Wasatch Back. So let's talk about other projects that you have. I think there's a pipelining project coming up for the district.
Yeah, so we have about 300 miles of wastewater pipeline throughout the community. And these pipelines, some of which have been in place for, 80 years. So we have a new technique. I say new. We've been using it for a number of years, but it's relatively new, where we install a liner inside an existing pipe without having to dig it up. So think of a sewer line right down the center of Main Street. If we have to replace that pipe by digging it up, it becomes very disruptive and very costly. We have a technique that was developed years ago in Europe where you take this flexible liner, you put it inside the pipe, you basically blow it up, and then you use either heat or UV and you harden it in place. And it's a fairly quick technique. You can do a section of pipe in a day's time. And we usually spend, quite a bit of money each year. I'm talking like $1 million plus to line various pipelines throughout the community that are aging. And this year we are lining 62 different pipeline segments throughout the community. So if you see a crew out that has this kind of rolled up flexible pipe and you kind of wonder what's going on, that's probably one of our crews installing these liners.
So this means you only have to dig in certain sections in order to fill the pipe with the liner instead of digging up a whole street or something?
Actually, this process requires no digging. We actually just pull a manhole cover.
Wow.
And we have these different pieces of equipment that we use to insert the liner into the pipe from the bottom of the manhole. So, yeah, we don't even have a piece of heavy equipment out on these jobs at all.
Well, because the digging is expensive.
Digging's expensive, and you hit other utilities, and you disrupt store owners and homeowners, and we all, we understand all that. So this is a great technique that's actually less expensive than, digging up Main Street or any other street, far as that goes. And the good news is these liners are designed to last for 75 years. So you'll see us doing quite a bit of this type of what we call rehabilitation.
So you said there's 62 projects or 62 sites this summer. And where are they in the community? What are people going to see?
Well, they're scattered pretty much across the community, but there is a heavy emphasis on the Jeremy Ranch area. And then there are some segments right here in Old Town, and you'll see some signs up, and you'll see trucks in place. And if your business or home is impacted, we may knock at your door and say, hey, we're going to install this liner. Can you not flush or use your washing machine for a couple of hours while we install this liner?
So minimal impact to the community.
It's minimal impact. I mean, it's certainly there's a little disruption, but it sure beats digging up the entire pipe and having weeks and weeks and weeks of disruption.
And then about what time of year are you going to start, and how long do you think the project will take?
Okay, we're starting this week, and we'll go all the way through the summer.
And so finish up about the time school's starting again?
Probably about October.
October. Yeah. Okay, great. You said the liners last like 75 years or more?
Yes.
So seems like a great way to spend our taxpayer dollars, something that lasts a long time and doesn't disrupt the community very much.
Yeah, these are the types of advancements that we see in the wastewater business, and especially rehabilitating these older pipelines that have been in place for a long time. We call this process cured in place pipe, or CIPP, we are very thankful we have this type of technique available.
Okay, so I think the district also has a lot of other things going on. There was a Household Hazardous Waste Collection Day, is that right?
Yeah, so recently Recycle Utah, in cooperation with the Sunrise Rotary Club, Summit County, Park City, and the Wastewater District, held a Hazardous Waste Collection Day at the base of Park City Mountain Resort. And I just want to say thank you to your listeners. Hundreds and hundreds of cars showed up. It was very successful. And with everyone's help, we were able to keep a lot of, say, medicines and hazardous materials out of the wastewater system and the local landfill. So a big kudos to your listeners. And we'll have another one of these household collection days in the fall. So keep all your stuff and show up for our next event.
And what kinds of things, Tim, are being medicine? Is it e-waste?
It's e-waste, meds, oils, paints. We always get lots of paints, tons. And when I say lots, I'm talking about thousands of pounds get turned in. And there was approximately like 500 cars that showed up for this
wow.
event. Yeah, it was tremendous success. And that is really a big deal.
So what else do we need to know about our wastewater and what's happening in the district right now?
Well, we started out here by talking about the drought. I just want to mention that the Summit County Speakers Series this evening is holding a discussion about drinking water and well water and all. And that meeting will be held at the Mountain Regional Water Special Service District office off of Highway 40. That's at 6 p.m. Reservations are requested, but Mountain Regional, Weber Basin Water Conservancy District, and the Utah Division of Drinking Water and Camas City will share insights into how their water systems work and what low water years can mean for drinking water.
Okay, that's great information to have. Anything else you've got for us this morning?
Well, just one little tip. We talk about conservation and all and not wasting water. We say, hey, one of the easiest things you can do is take some food coloring and put it in the tank of your commodes and your toilets and see if any of that color shows up in the bowl without flushing. If it does, that means that rubber seal in your tank is worn out and needs to be replaced. So it's a real simple thing that you can do. Just put a little food coloring in that tank, let it sit for an hour, and if that colored water shows up in the bowl, then you probably need to go down to Home Depot and buy a new seal or have your plumber come in and help you out.
I got to say, right now, I'm wishing we were live on video so you could give us a demonstration.
If you got any questions, give us a call.
Okay, we sure will. That is Mike Lures from the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. Mike, we really appreciate your time, and we'll see you next month.
Thank you, Jennifer.
All right, take care. Yeah. After a year of renovations, the Park City Mark's new pools will open June 6th. KPCW's Christine Weller reports locals can sign up now for new programs.
The Park City Mark closed its decades-old leisure and lap pools last year for renovations. Now, Recreation Division Manager Heather Todd says the $9 million upgrades are nearly done.
We're expecting to put water in this week, hopeful the weather participates in that. But we're running on a schedule and ready to be open to the public June 6th.
The 25-yard lap pool will increase from 6 to 8 lanes. Todd said the leisure pool will have something for all ages, including zero entry access or a gradual slope into the water mimicking a natural beach.
There's a climbing wall for kids. There will be a basketball hoop. There's a large slide. There's a zero entry that has their own little kiddie slide in there. So I think that every age group will find something to discover at this pool.
There are also new accessibility features such as ADA lifts. With the pool openings coming up, Todd said registration for new programs is also open. They include mermaid, DJ, and movie parties, as well as safety, yoga, and lifeguard courses. The city will host a grand opening event on June 6th at 11:30 a.m., complete with a live DJ, food trucks, and prizes. A link to pool hours can be found at kpcw.org. Christine Weller, KPCW News.
With summer right around the corner, Park City's getting ready for its annual slate of community events, which of course includes music. And here to talk about this with us is the annual Park City Summit Song Summit founder, Ben Anderson. Good morning, Ben. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Oh,
I hear that you have lots of good news for us about what to expect this summer, and there's also a little name change announcement you want to make.
Well, we are Song Summit Park City. So we are very happy to be back. This is Song Summit 6, and it's super stoked that we are going on sale here in, looks like about an hour and a half.
Okay.
So we are very, very excited for on sale day. So happy on sale day.
Happy on sale day. Give us a quick reminder about Song Summit and how it was founded and why.
In 2018, I was sitting with some musician friends of mine after a show in Salt Lake, and we had lost yet another friend to mental illness and substance abuse. And it was just a moment where we said, you know, enough's enough. What can we do as our little part in this world to try to be agents of change and to bring normalcy and clarity to the music industry, which I prefer to call the music community, and to try to see if we could make a difference. I am personally in long-term recovery myself, as was the musician that I was speaking to, Anders Osborne. And so we thought about doing something, and he said, beautiful Park City is a great place for us to start this and see if it lands well. And so we did. So in 2019, we had the Park City Songwriters Festival, which a new way to do a festival, which is starting with mindful mornings, yoga and meditation and sound baths, and then moving into, you know, recovery meetups for people that choose to do that, and lots of great non-alcoholic beverages as well as alcoholic beverages served throughout the day. And these wonderful differentiators we call Song Summit Labs, and the labs are these artist-led discussions around everything from social justice and mental health and inclusivity to the, you know, songwriting of some of the great legends, to the history of certain genres of music, to conservation and environmentalism, Olympic sports and the pressures that go into that, as well as filmmaking and music. So there's a real byline that goes through all of these creative arts industries. And mental health is something that's been ignored or swept under the carpet for a long time. So we're here to do what the breast cancer awareness did starting 40 years ago, right, is to normalize it so that we can have more conversations about it and destigmatize it so that there are people that are seeking the help that they need and are able to say, yes, I am a person of depression. Yes, I'm someone who has anxiety. Yes, I have bipolar, or my son does, or my family does. Or yes, I have someone that has chemical dependency. And by leading the way through the powerful healing platform of music, we can then hopefully enter those conversations in a safe space and begin to learn more from each other, love each other more, and understand each other greater.
So all of that will be going on again this year. Tell us, what are the dates for the Song Summit?
August 27, 28, and 29. We do our kickoff dinner and show on August 27th with a wonderful celebrity chef and musician. That night will be Andrew Zimmern and Sierra Hall at Le Depot Brasserie. We'll be at Le Depot Brasserie for three nights in a row with different celebrity chefs, different artists who will be playing that night, and of course different menus curated by both the musician and the celebrity chef. So that night it will be Andrew Zimmern and Sierra Hall. Then we will do our second line from there up to the Marquee, which is where our nighttime performances will be every night. And it will be the great Steve Pultz, singer-songwriter from Canada, opening up for Sierra Hall and her band. And then Friday and Saturday on the 28th and 29th of August, we will start our days in Library Field, which we are terming Song Summit Village this year, brought to you by the Song Summit Foundation, our 501c3 that works with emerging artists and helps them to have a place to come and commune together, play together, have a stage to perform on, and to and go to some of the workshops and master classes and labs. And that is going to be free and open as a give back and thank you to our community and the city that has been so supportive of us, as well as our county, to say, come to Song Summit Village at Library Field on Friday the 28th from 11 to 7 and Saturday the 29th from 11 to 7. There'll be food trucks, celebrity chef activations, the foundation stage that I mentioned with music all day, and lots of great vendors there, local and regional. And it will be just a great place for all ages and free to the public. And we'll start our days with morning yoga and meditation and sound baths there. And that will be followed by, and in conjunction with the village, we will have our labs again in Song Summit Village, right next to it at Jim Santee Auditorium. So at Jim Santee, there will be three labs each day on Friday and Saturday, starting at about noon and going until about 5:30.
And tell me a little bit more about the labs. What happens?
Yes. The lab is a place like a lab where we get together and have conversations about all of these different topics that I mentioned: songwriting, live music, touring, wellness, mental health in sports and film. There's always some performances going on too. It's a great way for us to talk about some of the issues that artists face, the creative arts face, that we as humans face, and different pioneers who are out there, change makers, who are out there in the world doing great things through their various organizations, literally around the world, and taking ideas that are trying to make our society, our planet, and the people on it live better lives. And by doing that, we have an opportunity to hopefully be inspired and to leave with calls to action to go back to our communities and try to also effectuate some change everywhere we can in a very divided world. So those labs are really impactful. They're one of a kind, and we're really excited about our lineup for them this year.
It sounds like it would be a great opportunity for someone, no matter like where you are in your journey, if you're like entering the industry or an arts industry, or if you've been in it for a long time, there would be something for everyone.
Whether you're a fan of filmmaking, sports, culinary, you know, whether you are someone who just wants to hear more about people's stories and their journeys and their struggles and their successes and how they made it through it. It is definitely something for everyone, no matter whether you are a fan of any of those particular sports or creative arts. It's a talk about humanity and moving ourselves forward in a positive way. And so, yes, there's lots of great takeaway, and we have made them this year. Our price point is extremely affordable, and there'll be early bird ticket pricing for everyone across the board for all Song Summit events this year. And so there's only a limited number of early bird pricing, so we encourage everybody to get on there today at songsummit.com and look through there. And there's save and bundle type things on checkout. We've tried to make it to where, well, free is a good, pretty good price for starters.
Everyone's
at the Song Summit Village. Prize point started at about $45 after that for some of our GA shows at the Marquee. So, yes, that's what's going on at the Labs. And then we've got some great culinary offerings this year and great music to talk about.
So let me ask you real quickly. This is the sixth year, you said?
Correct.
Why does it work? What makes it work?
What makes it work are the people and the vision that we have. And I think that the environment that we try to create, it is a way different vibe from your traditional or average music festival, where it's just stage after stage of music and you're basically coming for the music and food and beverage. People come to Song Summit for the vibe. They come for the mountain vibe. They come for the inclusive and safe feel of it. And they know that they're going to see some of their favorite artists and some new artists who are very accessible, and they're very vulnerable and transparent about who they are as humans. And we learn more about them and ourselves in that process. And it does create a creative environment, a more connected environment, and certainly a more community feel that we are all in this together. It gives people the space and the grace to be able to open up their hearts, open up their minds, and to learn more about each other, to learn more about life. And hopefully by the time we get ready to dance at night at the Marquee, people's hearts are full and they're ready to expend some of that energy that they have throughout the day, only to rinse and repeat it for the next day. It works because the people that come are looking for something different from a multi-day event. Mm-hmm. They're looking for to be part of change and transformation, both personally and through our communities. And I think that's why it works.
So you mentioned the great artists, and I see there's quite a great list here. Jim James, the acoustic artist, Sierra Hall, Patrick Callahan from My Morning Jacket. Who else are you really excited about? I mean, I'm sure you're excited about everyone, but who else should people be on the lookout for?
Well, Dumpsta Funk is going to grace the stage of the Marquee as our final show on Saturday night. And, of course, that's Ivan Neville of the Neville family in New Orleans. And Dumpsta Funk has been playing for a very long time to audiences around the world. A great New Orleans funk band. And they curated a Generations of Funk, P-H-U-N-K, to honor some of the greats that inspired them, like Sly and the Family Stone, Parliament Funkadelic, and the Meters. So they'll be honoring the music of them and others that night. And I'm very excited to do a Day of Bobby Weir tribute on Saturday. It will start with some very cool labs with Jay Blakesburg and Steve Poltz doing a unique lab. This is going to be only the third place that they've done it. They're doing one at Garcia's in Chicago, one at High Sierra Fest in California, and then they'll be doing ours in Park City, which is photography and storytelling around the great Bobby Weir. And then there will be that day a lab called Mountains of the Moon, a new film by Chris Benchetler. And Chris will be here to do a Q&A, and there will be a live Grateful Dead inspired band playing the film score in Jim Santee to Mountains of the Moon. And then that night, right before Dumpsta Funk, My band will play Song Summit for the first time, Iko. And Iko and friends will be playing nothing but Bobby Weir music to honor him that night. He brought music and love and probably will stand as the Guinness Book of World Records live music artist that played more live shows than anyone in music American music history, because he played 30 years with the Grateful Dead, mm-hmm. and then he played, you know, another 38 after that. And so the man brought a lot of love to this world and a lot of deep connection and a lot of impact. And so we're going to honor him that night. My band is with Holly Bowling on keyboards, Eric Krasno joined us on guitar, Ross James joined us on guitar, and Nikki Bloom from Nashville will be doing some singing with us. So, of course, I'm very excited about that night. But Friday night with Jim James opening up for Patrick Callahan, his drummer, and a whole super group of folks playing with him is going to be phenomenal. Those are some of the greatest artists of our time all playing together in a collaborative form with their own set list, and we're calling it Mountain Jam, a Song Summit Collective. And they're going to work up a really great list of tunes. So we're going to blow the doors off of the marquee that night. And then, of course, Friday night with Steve Holtz and Sierra Holtz. Sierra, you know, four-time Grammy nominated this year, bluegrass picker, beautiful voice. She's played in Park City, so she's starting to develop a new fan base in our area. And so she's going to be on the big stage with her band. And that's going to be, you know, very exciting, too. So I love the lineups there, and I love the lineup of our celebrity chefs coming, who will be cooking with those artists each night before they play, and also will do activations outside of Le Depot in the plaza there, and we'll be doing activations in Song Summit Village at Library Field each day. So we have Chef Andrew Zimmern, multiple James Beard Award winner, Emmy winner, TV personality, producer. We will have Damaris Phillips, also Food Network, and Top Chef, et cetera. We have Gregory Gourdet, James Beard Award winner, winner of Top Chef. We have Sean Brock, multiple James Beard Award winner, and also DJ and vinyl head. So Eugenie Jaffe of KRCL will be interviewing him about vinyl and vittles. And he'll be doing a thing where he DJs. He's huge. Huge vinyl collector and has two listening rooms in LA and Nashville. He'll be spinning albums and cooking at the same time for us in Song Summit Village. And then Chef Stephanie Izard will be with us this year as well. So each night these curations are going to be great at Le Depot, and I can't wait for our community to come out, get some good food, get some great music, and some good wellness.
Well, it sounds like a can't miss Park City weekend. So give us we have to let you go back to your real life now, but quickly remind us where people can go to get tickets.
Songsummit.com.
And that's
Songsummit.com, and that comes live at 10 a.m. Mountain Time. And again, early bird pricing, limited number of tickets, and you save, and then, of course, bundle and save on checkout. Really hope the community will come out and support us as we have tried to support our community low these many years. And I'm so grateful that you would have me on this morning. We love KPCW. You guys are great partners of ours, and we really appreciate public radio and having you guys as a deep part of our community. Deepest gratitude to you and everyone in the Park City and Summit County area for being supporters of Song Summit.
Thanks, Ben. We appreciate your time. Have a great day.
Thanks. You too. Bye-bye.
Joining us now in studio is Andy Hecht, Executive Director of Recycle Utah, and I think he's got an update on plans for your new location. And also with us is Chelsea. I'm going to forget your last name, and I
Paper.
Shouldn't. I shouldn't, because I know you. But so welcome to both of you. We're so happy that you're here.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you for having us.
You are so welcome. So you've inked the paperwork on the property.
We have. And that was a very big moment. So thank you for everything, everyone who had fingerprints on that whole project. And that land is now Recycle Utah's, 4.18 acres out by the Home Depot, behind the High Valley Bus Transit.
I'm sure you felt like you could finally, like, exhale, waiting for it to all happen, because it took a minute.
There's been many steps in the process, but it was done right, and it was done in a good way, and we are so excited to move forward.
So what's the plan now? You got an extended date at your current location, mm-hmm. to get out to the new spot, so that is pushed you back, what, about 6 months?
Yeah, so our new date is March of 2027. Obviously, we're not going to have a building built by then. So the current plan is to have a temporary facility, which we are all working on incredibly hard right now, to maintain the current operations we have, just what we're doing now, moving it out there so we have continuity of service. While the temporary facility is operating, we'll be running a fundraising campaign to fund the new construction, and we have a brilliant building going up to serve Summit County and all the sustainability needs and waste diversion efforts.
So I've heard that there is a community survey that people can get involved with to share their ideas for what they want in their next recycling facility. Is that
absolutely? Is that right? And I'll turn it over to Chelsea to talk a little bit more about that. But in right now, just in our visioning and working with all these stakeholders and understanding what the community wants, this is how we're getting feedback. So I'll turn it over to Chelsea.
Yeah, like Andy was saying, we're in a really exciting visioning process right mm-hmm. now. So we're looking at other facilities across the country. And, you know, we just had the Zero Waste Forum here last month. And so that gave us some ideas from other facilities even across the world. And so we're kind of working with our board right now to figure out what are the most important features of this building and what purposes it's going to serve. And we want to hear from the community, too. And so we have a survey that is up on our website. It's linked in our bios on our social media. If you go on our website at all, a little box will pop up. And it's just a few questions that are asking this community what they're looking for from the building. So what kind of events they would attend at the building, what would be the main draws, what they think that this building should, what purpose they think it should serve in the community. And so we'd love to hear from people. Even if you don't come to Recycle Utah right now, we're really trying to figure out how this building and our organization can serve our entire county and what people are looking for. So please fill that out.
So does that mean if I think you should be recycling X, you want to hear from
yeah.
me?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so there's spaces for that. There's spaces for, like, what kind of workshops would you attend? If we had a tool library, what kind of tools would you want in it? If we had community composting, would you participate in that? So really, it's kind of everything that we've seen in other similar facilities and trying to narrow it down. What is our community specifically looking for?
So are you hoping to expand the types of services that you'll be able to
Definitely.
Offer when you get into a new space?
Absolutely. So greatly expanding the diversion capacity of Recycle Utah. I mean, we're going to have a very large warehouse in the back, eventually with a sorting line. So we'll be able to take commingled commercial drop-off point, tip floor is what they call it in the industry. We'll still run as the community hub where you can drop off. Right now we're at 47 and we're increasing
to 52.
To 52 separate items that we divert.
Wow.
If anyone in the community has an idea of what we should be recycling that we currently aren't recycling, we'd love to hear from you because we need to constantly learn and grow. But yes, expanding diversion efforts and programming. You know, we have wonderful green drinks. We have cleanup days. We have our store. Come by and take a look at our warehouse. We have an amazing reused store. We call it the warehouse. And that will be bigger. We'll have more items. We're strengthening that as we speak right now.
It's one of the challenges sometimes that people don't know what they have that can come to you and be recycled.
Yeah, and that's what we do. We try and do a lot of tours. We try and do a lot of like non-formal education online and on our social medias. Yeah, I would say that adults are much less aware. A lot of the time they hear from their kids, oh my gosh, we can recycle this at Recycle Utah. But yeah, we're expanding in the next few months, even a few more things that we can recycle.
I will tell you that I have had my recycle bin flagged by my waste collector for putting the wrong things in.
So call us and ask.
Maybe
we
I
get
need
questions
to find out.
All the time. Yeah.
And wow. big shout out to Chelsea. We have a very robust education program. Chelsea interacts with over 7,000 students every year. We have summer camps, we have school programs. So education is a huge central part of what Recycle Utah does in the community.
So are you're into the design process? Like, do you have a design for the building? What does it look like? Is there a model for what you
yeah,
want?
Yeah, so we've been working with a local architect. And we have an architectural advisory board from our main board. We've got great people on that board right now. We've been working through the schematic phase. We have square footage, we have some layout, we know roughly where the building's gonna be. We saw just this past week, last week on Wednesday, we saw the very first preliminary drawings that, you know, there's still a lot of design elements that need to change, so nothing is public yet, but it really got the board, the staff, really pumped up, and we're having some pretty cool meetings coming up real soon. Everything's moving really quickly right now because we do have that March date to get up and running for the temporary facility, and we're full steam ahead. It's really exciting.
And is the temporary facility something that will be like absorbed into the final building, or is that gonna, are they gonna be in two different places on that site?
Yeah, that's a great question. We've thought about so many different possibilities of how to phase the construction around this. I mean, there are options to have a building that then becomes a different use once the permanent facility. Right now, we're not too sure how it's gonna play out. We think that the temporary facility will have a separate office that is looking like it's being donated to us, and then we'll have a tent or a steel structure that operates for our operations. And that may not have a place on our property on the permanent facility. But we're still working through some of those.
So what's the general construction calendar?
Yeah, so March is the hard date, right? March is when we have to be off the land we're on now, and we have to have that temporary facility up and running. We're looking at later in the year, possibly fall, to start a fundraising campaign. To raise money for the building, for the permanent structure, start spreading that around, showing what we can do, what value we bring to the county, and then hopefully get shovels in the ground before the end of the year.
So fall of this year, so fall of 2026?
Yeah.
Okay. And what kind of capital campaign are we talking about? Like, how much money do you need to raise?
Well, I hesitate to say any numbers on the air because we're still working through some of the details. I can tell you that a lot of the city, the county, and a few individuals have been very generous already in pledges, and the city and county are giving, you know, gift of land improvements, things like that. As we get closer, we'll have more numbers, and that's when we can really share those those drawings and what we're able to do.
We're going to have like a Christmas morning experience, and we're all going to find out together what it's going to look like.
We're so excited to share because we, working on it on the inside, we know what Recycle Utah is capable of, and that's what we're designing it to. And it's I wish I could share everything right now, but, you know.
Well, we can have you back, Andy. I want to ask you about something happening at Park City this week. They have an ordinance on their agenda that will expand recycling for the business sector in town. Did you guys have a role in that, or did you have a hand in talking to the city about what types of things might be right for an ordinance?
Yeah, so Luke and Celia in the sustainability department are amazing. They have so much knowledge in this, and they did research on how this works, so it's not just some weird thing that's out there and more pressure on businesses. And during that whole process, they engaged with us because a lot of businesses will want to become self-haulers, and we are probably the best destination for those self-haulers. So we've instituted a program, it's rolled out, it's up and running, it's called the Commercial Membership Program. And if you are a business that is in Park City and you're a self-hauler, you're bringing it here to Recycle Utah, check in, register, we'll get you on the books, we can track your diversion rate for you, and we can even report on your behalf back to the city, save you a few steps in that whole process.
And so what will this ordinance do exactly? Would it set a requirement for businesses to participate in?
Well, I don't want to speak on behalf of the city, because it is their ordinance. My understanding is it is a requirement to have a diversion account in addition to a trash account. So if you are a business, you can't just say, yeah, I throw my stuff away.
Right.
So first of all, there is no such thing as a way. Let's think about what that is. But if you have a trash account, this ordinance says, yes, you have to have either glass or cardboard or food waste in addition to that.
And why does this matter?
It just increases the diversion rate. I know we're running close to time, but we have landfill issues, expensive landfill. We need to start understanding that what we put in the trash often has a lot of value. Not only do we need to keep it out of the landfill, but do the right thing with it.
Okay, that's all the time we have. Thanks very much for being with us.